NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there and welcome to the Country Hour this Tuesday lunchtime. My name is Dan Fitzgerald. Today we're going to head out into the paddock at the Katherine Research Station, which is getting ready for its annual bull sale.
We've been selecting for fertility. They're a majority Brahman with smaller percentages of European breeds brought in to increase meat quality and maintain hybrid vigour.
And sticking in Katherine, did you hear the good news this morning? Decision made on the Katherine show. It will go ahead as planned next week. That is great news for the town. Also today, bag limits have been announced for this year's waterfowl season. And there's some shooters who aren't too happy with the bag limits.
Today's announcement of a three-bird bag limit isn't really consistent with bag limits from previous years, when bird numbers appeared to be larger than they currently are. Now, I'm a firm believer on mathematics and science, but the information that was presented to us in this year's seasonal briefing appeared to be flawed and inconsistent.
Yeah, the bag limits are 3 magpie geese and 10 ducks per person per day when the season kicks off in September. Oh, and also today, French champagne producers are not happy with Russia after the country made a ruling that champagne from the region must be labelled sparkling wine if it's sold in Russia. It has really got under the feathers of some French champagne producers. I'll tell you more before 1:30. But first up today, we can tell you that the Bachelor Meatworks, the Territory's only commercial-sized abattoir, is officially back in business for 2021, doing its first kill of the year yesterday. Now, the abattoir shut down in December last year for its scheduled wet season break, but it didn't open up earlier this year when anticipated, until now, the second week of July. Early this morning, I had a chat to the Central Agri Group's Johnny DeKira, and I asked him how the first day of processing went.
Yeah, things went really well. We're very, very happy to be open, and we are open for business. The team done a fantastic job. Yesterday is the completion of day one, where we focused on processing buffalo through our plant. And this season, we're taking a strong approach on the throughput of buffalo through the plant.
How many buffalo did you process yesterday?
Look, yesterday we did 49 head as a somewhat of a soft start after being shut for a period of time. And we'll look steadily to increase those numbers up to our 82 head a day program that we've modelled.
The first kill coming in July, that certainly wasn't the plan for the company when it did its scheduled shutdown for the wet season back in December. Can you give us an insight into why the company delayed its start and what was going on?
Yeah, look, obviously not ideal, Dan, but like many other businesses, and not just within our industry, but in many industries, I believe we've all faced some challenges and nuances with what we've all been living through and the current COVID landscape. Not ideal. However, we heard the calls from industry for us to be open, and that was our main endeavour to be open. And whilst we've opened late, we are open now for business, and I'm very excited to be open and be contributing to the Northern Territory economy again.
Live export prices are at record highs. Domestic prices are way up. How big of a factor was that in your decision?
Oh, look, there was many factors in our decision. But no one wanted to open the Bachelor Abattoir more than we did. No one wanted us to be open more than we did. We've made a significant investment in the north, specifically with our Bachelor asset. Critical for us to be open. We're not in the business of having abattoirs around the country which are sitting shut down and stagnant. Abattoirs don't like to be shut over a long weekend, let alone for a 7-month period. So, yeah, look, there was many factors. The main thing is that we're open now, and we're open, and we're looking forward to the rest of the year.
Looking forward to the rest of the year, just how heavily are you going to be leaning on buffalo?
Yeah, look, our production program and model is very buffalo-centric. and that's basically 82 head of buffalo a day over a five day week, and every fortnight looking to process cattle. So really working with industry to ensure that the throughput of buffalo through our plant this year.
Do you have a rough estimate as to how many buffalo you're expecting to do this year?
Look, based on that model, it's about 410 head per week, and we'll be looking to process right up until sort of the 19th of December.
What's the markets for that buffalo meat that you'll be producing there at Batchelor?
We're going to continue to develop some markets that we opened after operating in year one. The big one for us, Dan, is our Indonesian listing. We've had some good news this week that is being signed off by the department and forwarded to Indonesia. So we have opened in year two again without our Indonesian listing. That's a critical market for us, and we need that market. It's a very, very important market, along with the US as well, which we ticked off last year. So, yeah, Indonesia being the big one, and we're hopeful that we'll get some positive news and that listing shortly.
The price of some hides has increased by over 8,000% in the last 12 months. Some have gone from about 25 cents each to over $20 each. What does that mean for Batchelor, and is there much demand for buffalo hide?
Look, we have had some interest in our buffalo hides in recent times leading up to our opening. It's that just adds extra upside, and the ability to generate revenue, important revenue from every part of that beast. Hides plummeted and had been at lows for a very long time. It's extremely positive now that that hides have lifted. For a long time, hides were at no commercial value, which makes it hard. We need to extract everything we can out of every beast that we put through our plant. So that's extremely positive.
Darwin's lockdown, it only just ended last Friday. How concerned did that make it for your start update yesterday?
Oh, look, yes, that was definitely concerning. And our business faced many challenges due to that lockdown. But, we worked very closely with the department and various departments, and they were very receptive to us. And we've still got some challenges to work through, but they've been very supportive. Other industry bodies, NTCA, NT Farmers, and NT Industry Buffalo Council, in particular, Will Evans from the NTCA and Paul Burke from NT Farmers were extremely supportive to our business in working through some of these challenges.
I saw that abattoirs weren't considered an essential service, whereas a lot of other primary production and primary industry jobs were. What did you make of that?
Oh, look, as mentioned, Dan, there's a few things for our business to continue to work through. The department's been very good and receptive in understanding the nuances around some of those challenges. And once again, the various industry bodies very, very supportive. And look, we'll continue to work on some of those challenges. When we're operating, we're a significant contributor to the NT economy and NT food security and globally. When I say a significant contributor to the NT economy, to the tune of $3 million a week when we're operating. So look, everyone recognises this as being important. As mentioned previously, we've heard the calls from industry that we need to be operating, and we're here to operate. So we'll continue to work through with industry and work through some of these challenges.
What's it been like trying to find workers to staff the plant?
Oh, look, labour resource issues, particularly skilled workers, is a challenge that we face with our, not just in the Northern Territory, but nationally for our business. It's always a challenge. Look, our production model and program, basically we employ 53 staff and supervisors and managers on top of that. It's always a challenge. It's always a challenge. And particularly for that skilled labour.
That is Johnny DeKira. He is a Group General Manager for Central Agri Group, which owns the Batchelor Meatworks. And as of yesterday, it is back up and running in 2021. What do you say there? 410 head of buffalo per week between now and the 19th of December is what they're estimating they might do. So that adds up to around 9,000 head of buffalo if all goes to plan, and hopefully it does. Everybody in the industry is wishing them well. If you want to get in contact with the abattoir, you can search for Central Agri Group online, or the best bet also would be to call the NT Cattlemen's Association or the NT Buffalo Industry Council, and they'll be able to put you in contact with the abattoir.
Yeah, g'day, it's Jed Fawcett from Adelaide River. During the dry season, I go out and we do a bit of contract buffalo catching, bull catching. When I get a chance, I like to tune into the ABC Country Hour.
Nineteen to one here on the Country Hour with me, Dan Fitzgerald, on ABC Radio right across the territory. There's a new minister for Northern Australia. It's David Littleproud. He's in Darwin today. So, what's his vision for Northern Australia? You'll hear from him after Casey Musgraves. Casey Musgraves there with High Horse. It is 15 minutes to one here on the Country Hour with me, Dan Fitzgerald. Now, after Barnaby Joyce once again became leader of the Nationals Party, he did a bit of a reshuffle of his front bench. And out of that, David Littleproud took on responsibility for Northern Australia alongside his agriculture portfolio. David Littleproud, he's in Darwin this week, and he told Adam Steer he'll be spending a bit of time with representatives from NAIF, the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility.
I'm meeting with the Office of Northern Australia and the NAIF today to say, what is the pathway? What are you going to get done between now and the next election? What is then after the election? What is the flight plan you have for the delivery of not just the NAIF funding? That's just one component of Northern Australia. And I think we focus a whole lot just on the NAIF. There's a whole lot of other opportunities. And that's why going into infrastructure opens up that opportunity to complement and supplement what happens with the NAIF with grant funding.
But you only have to look at the North Australia Infrastructure Facility to get a grasp of how underwhelming the Northern Australia agenda has been for the territory. Just four loans since it was established in 2016.
Yeah, so there's, of the $5 billion, there's around $3.2 billion that's out the door at the moment. The majority has been in Queensland, WA. There's under $1 billion with respect to out of the Northern Territory. And that's why I'm meeting not only with the Chief Minister but with the opposition leader here as well this week to make sure that I have a clear understanding of the pathway in which we can collaborate and work together, because we do need the states to come with us, because a lot of the resources are owned by the states and managed by the states. And if we're to unlock them, we need them to come with us. And it has to be a partnership. And I have a good relationship with the Chief Minister and the opposition leader here, and I want to make sure that my job is the opportunity to leave a legacy. And the legacy is about making sure that people in Northern Australia, particularly in Darwin and right across the Northern Territory, get a fair crack, get their fair share, and are able to be given that pathway to keep the next generation of Territorians here in the Territory.
Let's go to the mango farmers. They're desperate for a workforce ahead of the upcoming mango season. What are you doing to help them?
Well, we started back in March last year and extending the Pacific and seasonal worker programs, allowing them to stay longer. We also opened up in-country quarantine. So every state and territory in this country can now go to Vanuatu and Fiji and allow in-country quarantining to take place. South Australia has signed up to that. No other territory or state would. In fact, in August, South Australia will sign up with Vanuatu to trial that. So the 25,000 men and women that we found in the Pacific, there's been about 7,000 have come in. So the states and territories give the health approvals, we give the visa approval. So the states have to get comfortable in the way in which they bring them in. They signed up to that in March last year through National Cabinet, and they were to do that in addition to the caps of international arrivals. So in the territory, they've used Howard Springs. There's another facility here, also Borden Village, I think it is.
Bladen Point.
Is
the federal government still keen on that? Because the Vanuatu workers were in Howard Springs last year. That's obviously now off the table because it's being used for those repat flights. Is the federal government still keen on Bladen Point? The Northern Territory Chief Minister has all but ruled it out as defence are using it until September.
No. So the opportunities are there for the Northern Territory government, and this is what the South Australian government did, is they're all pointing at one another, but the reality is South Australia's led the way on this. Not only are they doing in-country quarantining in Vanuatu, but they've used a village of their own in South Australia, where they're bringing in 1,200 workers themselves. So it's the opportunity of the states and territories to come up with these things. We have no problems with that. In fact, every state and territory were given a plan by Palladian Health and Aspen Medical back in October last year to bring workers in where they would look after them in a tent city environment, quarantine them. Greg Hunt, was one that actually promoted this to the health ministers to say, this is a good way to do it, to bring in seasonal workers in addition to your caps. So the opportunity's there. The states said they want to sign up to this. They're the ones that want to own it, but they've got to do something about it. We will support them. Make no mistake, we will be there to support them.
Final question.
David Littleproud, he is the Minister for Northern Australia, and he's also still the Minister for Agriculture. He was speaking there to Adam Steer on ABC Radio Darwin earlier this morning.
Open your ears to the world with the ABC Listen app. Join Yumi Steins as she delves into taboo topics in Ladies We Need to Talk.
If I straightened my hair, I was fitting in, and if I didn't, then I was suddenly sort of a Black Panther or something.
Or immerse yourself in the life of someone else in conversations with Richard Feidler and Sarah Kanoski.
I remember hearing this tremendous roar, and then the boat was literally picked up and thrown upside down.
Open your ears to the world with the ABC Listen app.
Turning now to the live export trade, the Federal Department of Agriculture has run a trial using remote video cameras on a live export ship. So these cameras, they were designed to monitor the health and condition of animals on the ship during the voyage. And the department says it's seeing if cameras could be used to replace independent observers on board, physical people on board the ships. The Dr. Melissa McEwen, she spoke to Max Rowley about the trial.
What we did was trialled on one of a ship that was travelling domestically. It's quite challenging at the moment to do anything internationally given COVID, where we put five remote trail cameras onto the MV Ocean Swagman for the domestic leg of a cattle voyage between Fremantle and Portland in Victoria. And so the cameras were installed by department officers in Fremantle and then removed in Portland after a five-day voyage.
And what were you trying to monitor with these cameras?
So one of the things that we've introduced in the last couple of years has been independent observers. And we're looking at ways that we can supplement and change that kind of monitoring. And so what we were trying to see was, could this be a technology that could be used to observe animal behaviours and whether they are eating, drinking, other issues such as whether animals are lying down regularly and so forth, to get a sense of whether their welfare is being maintained properly on these voyages.
Okay. And so somebody at the moment, there are people on these ships that do this job, is that right?
So we had had independent observers on ships, but we had to pause that during COVID because of the international travel ban. All exporters use stock people on board ships to actually look after the animals. But what we're trying to do is the layer of assurance so that from a government point of view, we can have additional assurance. So while we can't have independent observers on ships, and even potentially after we are able to, we'd like to be able to use a combination of technology potentially into the future, as well as using actual humans to do the work.
And so with this trial using the remote video cameras, what were the outcomes?
So we found that there were both good and bad outcomes out of it in terms of how useful they will be for us. The cameras, because of the nature of them, didn't impact on the livestock at all and were really useful to get a sense of what the natural behaviours of livestock on board the ship were when there were no humans around, because naturally human intervention can change things. The main limiting factor that we noted during the trial was the quality of the media collected by the cameras. primarily due to the low levels of light on deck. Some of the camera positioning wasn't quite right as well, which limited the range of view available to the camera. So we're going to take what we've learnt from this and do some additional trials. But this is just one of the kinds of technologies we're using. So it could be through using cameras of this nature or a different kind. It could be using smart glasses into the future. It could be things like using ear tags that can detect movement, so can tell you whether animals are feeding or lying down or standing and moving naturally and so forth. We're quite open to looking and exploring a whole range of technologies that might lead to more efficient regulation, so it will end up hopefully costing exporters less, but give us a higher level of assurance about animal welfare on board ships.
And so based on this trial, though, you said you're planning on some more trials, but what happens next, do you think? Do you see this being rolled out on all live export ships?
So I think it's probably a little bit early for that yet. What we want to do is continue to look at a few different options that are out there in the market in terms of technology, and to think about how we incorporate it into the program. What I would like to see in a couple of years, within the next 12 to 18 months, is us starting to look for outcomes rather than necessarily saying, you must use this technology. So we can say, we need you to assure us that these things are being done and to give us some way of verifying that's true. And whether that's technology, whether that's using independent observers, those are the kinds of questions that we'd like industry to work out what works for them. So we want to start trying to find some options that we can then work with industry to find the best, most efficient way to implement it.
Dr. Melissa McEwen, she is the Department of Agriculture's first Assistant Secretary for Live Animal Exports. And she was speaking there with our Catherine reporter, Max Rowley.
G'day, my name is Rex Collins. I work at Sturt Plain. You know, I like the store stations, like work around here. I love it. Good work, everything. You're listening to Country Owl.
Four minutes to one here on the Country Owl with me, Dan Fitzgerald, on ABC Radio right across the territory. Well, the Catherine Research Station will hold its annual bull sale tomorrow, with 65 Brahman and 35 composite bulls going under the hammer. Max Rowley, he went out into the paddock with one of the researchers there at the KRS to see how those bulls are looking.
I'm Gretel Bailey-Preston from DITT in Catherine, the Catherine Research Station. We're in the paddock here with the sale herd for 2021.
And how many bulls do you have in the paddock here?
Well, there's 100 bulls in the sale, but in this paddock there's 75 of them. These are the younger bulls, the younger 2019 bulls, and there's another 25 older ones in a different paddock.
Right, and the Catherine Research Station here has been holding bull sales for years. How far back does that go?
So the program's been running for 30 years.
And why did it start? What was the incentive there?
So the aim of the program was to breed the most fertile Brahman whilst keeping the adaptability to the northern environment as well as meeting live export specifications. This was because the Brahman breed was known for its ability to survive in harsh conditions, but not so much for their fertility. So we've been selecting for fertility for all of that time to try and improve overall fertility, and the composites were bred out of the Brahman herd in the early 2000s. They're a majority Brahman with smaller percentages of European breeds brought in to increase meat quality and maintain hybrid vigour. The purpose of the sale is to make these fertility genetics available to industry.
And what's the point of making this available to breeders in the territory?
Yeah, I suppose the aim is to improve the overall fertility of the Northern Territory herd.
So this is an online sale that you're holding tomorrow. We've had the border closures and lockdowns in the territory and neighbouring states in the past few weeks. I'm guessing it hasn't been too affected by those things then?
No, so the sale will still obviously be able to go ahead. It's all online. However, a few producers that would have liked to come and looked at the bulls were unable to do so.
And do you think that'll have an impact on the sale then?
We hope not, but it is still important to view the bulls. But the quality of these bulls is in their breeding value, not so much their appearance.
Gretel Bailey-Preston, she is a livestock research officer based out at the Katherine Research Station. Talking there about the research station's bull sale. It's an annual event. This year there are 65 Brahman and 35 composite bulls going under the hammer. And yeah, they'll be sold online via Auctions Plus. And we'll bring you all the details, the results from that later in the week.
Hello, my name's Danny Claris. I'm a mushroom pilot in the NT, doing chasing buffalo and cattle. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
The NT government has released its bag limits for the upcoming waterfowl season due to kick off in September. They are 3 magpie geese per day and 10 ducks per person per day. What does the NT Field and Game, the shooters group, think about that? We'll hear from them before 1:30. And how about this? Russia has made a ruling that wine producers in the Champagne region, if they're exporting their products to Russia, they must label it sparkling wine. Champagne labelled sparkling wine. The French are not happy about it. I'll tell you more before 1:30. It's time now for the 1 o'clock news.
Hi, I'm Max Emery. I'm the proprietor of Desert Garden Produce, Central Australia. The Bush Tomato King. When I'm out picking every day, my wonderful hour spent on the radio is with the Country Hour.
G'day there, Dan Fitzgerald is my name. Thanks for joining me for the Country Hour on this Tuesday lunchtime. We're broadcasting right across the territory on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. We're also on the Listen app. You plug that app into your phone, and if you're on the telly, well, we are on the telly as well, channel 26, I think, and we're also on the podcast. If you miss any of our program, you can always catch it up later if you just search for NT Country Hour in your podcast app. Still coming up this half hour, we're going to hear from NT Field and Game about its thoughts on this year's waterfowl bag limits.
Today's announcement of a 3-bird bag limit isn't really consistent with bag limits from previous years, when bird numbers appeared to be larger than they currently are. Now, I'm a firm believer on mathematics and science, and that the information that was presented to us in this year's seasonal briefing appeared to be flawed and inconsistent.
And we'll also hear from the Katherine Show Society. Good news out today is that the Katherine Show, it will go ahead. Sadly, Alice Springs and Tennant Creek both had to call off their shows, but as of next weekend, it's on in Katherine. Time now to check out what's happening in the weather. We've got Billy Lynch at the Bureau today. G'day, Billy. How you doing?
G'day, Dan. Going well, thanks.
That's the way. And now, speaking with Alice Springs reporter Hugo Ricard-Bell earlier today, he said he can barely find enough blankets for his bed at the moment. It's just that cold in Alice Springs. How are things this morning?
Yeah, look, I can hardly imagine how cold it must feel. So Alice Springs Airport dropped to -1.9 this morning. That actually makes it the fifth night this year that they've dropped below zero. Which coincidentally is spot on average up until the end of June. There are a few other places that went negative this morning. Even way up at Rabbit Flat was -0.8. We saw Curtin Springs -1.6, Yallara -0.3. And then the coldest place we've got in the territory was Wataka with -2.7.
Ooh, wow, that is cold. Has it warmed up already today? Much?
Definitely warming up because we've got clear sunny skies down there. Alice Springs is currently 16 degrees at the moment.
Oh, that's pretty good if you're out in the sun.
That's pretty good. And the news is it's going to get warmer each day this week. So we're going to start to see those overnight minimums come up a few degrees. So we're forecasting -1 for Alice Springs this tomorrow morning. And then they'll get out of the negatives by Thursday. And also those daytime temperatures will be jumping up a few degrees as well. So by the end of the week, they'll be getting up to around 23, 24 degrees.
Okay, that sounds like pretty comfortable conditions. How about a bit further north in Tennant Creek and the Barkly regions? How's the next few days looking?
Yeah, look, similar. So it dropped down to 9 this morning, so not quite as cool. Definitely expecting some sunny conditions through there, temperatures in the mid-30s. Even nudging up to the higher 30s, so around 28 or so by the end of the week. The winds are expected to pick up a little bit on Friday, so we'll get the return of the quite windy southeasterlies through the Barkly on Friday.
Yep. And for the top end, for those in Katherine, how are conditions?
Yeah, well, it was pretty cool for Katherine standards this morning as well. We got down to 12 degrees this morning. We're expecting another cool morning tomorrow of 11 or 12 degrees. Currently 28 and expecting a top of about 30 today. In general, across the top end, also expecting temperatures to warm up by a few degrees, both the overnight and the daytime temperatures. And we'll actually see some of that humidity return around the coast as well due to sea breezes and the more easterly winds. So the Arnhem District expected to see some patchy fogs returning from Thursday morning.
Okay, yeah, I felt it was still a little bit windy in Darwin this morning. What's going to happen to that wind?
Yeah, it's easing off. So, you know, tomorrow morning there'll be another little burst of those east-southeasterly winds. So it could still feel a little fresh in the morning, but they're going to weaken out fairly quickly. And then we'll get those afternoon coastal sea breezes. From about Thursday, the winds are going to really drop right out. And I guess it looks like the weekend. So from about Saturday, we'll get the next burst of dry southeasterlies pushing into the top end.
Okay. Anything else we need to be aware of today, Billy?
No, that's it, Dan. So, yeah, I hope everyone's rugged up and thawing out after this morning.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Thanks for the update, Billy.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
That is Billy Lynch there at the Weather Bureau. It is 11 minutes past one.
What do you think makes someone an Australian of the Year?
It's people who show courage, sacrifice and kindness.
Now's the time to reflect
on your community
and who you admire.
Now's the time to respect
by nominating and acknowledging them.
Now's the time to celebrate
their story,
their contribution
and their generosity.
I'm Hamish McDonald and I'd love you to nominate your inspirational Australian by the 31st of July at australianoftheyear.org.au.
Well, the NT government has set bag limits for the waterfowl season. So hunters this season will be allowed to take 3 magpie geese and 10 ducks per person per day. And the season, it'll run from September 22nd until January 10th. Dan Cox, he's the president of the NT Field and Game. I had a bit of a chat to him earlier and asked him what he thought about this season's bag limits.
Yeah, well, that's correct. Look, last wet season was a really good catalyst for the breeding of waterfowl and barramundi. And history tells us that geese are very resilient to fluctuant seasons and obviously their habitat. So not so long ago, there was no bag limit on the geese and populations appeared to be robust. Today's announcement of a 3-bird bag limit isn't really consistent with bag limits from previous years when bird numbers appeared to be larger than they currently are. Now, I'm a firm believer on mathematics and science, but the information that was presented to us in this year's seasonal briefing appeared to be flawed and inconsistent.
The NT government said its survey found that the magpie geese population was down by about 31% on last year to just under 1 million birds. Why shouldn't that mean that bag limits should also be cut?
Well, firstly, it's always been the hunter who's been penalised. NT Field and Game and all shooters who possess a hunting licence bring revenue to local businesses and traders. Now, we're out there all year round in all of those reserves, managing not just weeds, infestations, removing rubbish, emptying bins, replacing signage and cleaning up debris that have been left by others. At the beginning of the breeding cycle is the larger proportion of the problem. That's where it begins. Feral animals, pigs, buffalo, all put pressure on the front end of the goose population. The once pristine waterways at the top end are now becoming choked with infectious and noxious weeds and grasses. More really needs to be done in this area to give all waterfowl, not just geese, a better chance for long-term populations.
But that takes a lot of effort, and that's not a short-term fix to the issue. A pretty easy way of controlling it is to reduce those bag limits while also working on those other underlying problems. Why shouldn't the bag limits be used as an easy way to try and help control that population?
Oh, look, sure. Everyone has the opinion that a change in bag limits would suit the particular circumstance. We're in the belief that the way that some of that information was gathered this year in the count didn't really work. We see it as not so much of a failure, but inconsistent with their reports.
What do you think the bag limits should be this season?
Our belief is that there should be a set period of time with a set bag limit to get real data, not based on seasonal changes, not based on what's been counted. At the end of that period, you could determine the bird count from the bird count of the start of the period and come up with some true data.
The NT government says this is based on scientific advice. So do you dispute that scientific advice?
Well, what we got presented was a document containing scientific advice. We found flaws in the document that we tried to bring to the attention of the minister last night, but were dismissed.
How did that meeting with Minister Lawler go last night?
We made some good inroads, actually, in that meeting. The question was asked about what happens to revenue collected from hunter licensing. We asked the question, the answer was it goes into consolidated revenue. What we did discuss is taking that money out and putting it into a pool that could be managed in a way so NT Field and Game members and others in the community who would have interest in this would be for us to go out and manage some of those wetlands, bring the wetlands back to a pristine state, which we've proven we can do that before with funding, get rid of the weeds, make the place better for all users, and it would take pressure off the government by not having to spend as much time managing those wetlands. We do all this for free. We'd love to get the opportunity to put in what we take out. And just to add to that, there was a question asked in that meeting last night in regards to quantities of goose meat taken. NT Field and Game donate a large amount of our goose meat every year to Aboriginal people in the NT that are too sick or don't have the ability to get out and hunt for themselves. And that is welcomed by Open Arms of Purple House in the NT, which we work closely with. And we will be doing the same again this year, as we have done for many previous years.
Thanks for your time on the Country Hour today.
No worries. Thank you so much.
That is Dan Cox. He's the president of NT Field and Game, talking there about waterfowl season bag limits, which have just been set for the upcoming season. So they are 3 magpie geese and 10 ducks per person per day. We've got here a statement from Environment Minister Eva Lawler. She says this bag limit was based on science and listening to the experts. The statement reads, each year scientists from the Department of Environment count the number of magpie geese and the amount of nesting in the top end during an aerial survey over selected floodplains. These surveys use a long-established scientific method and give a robust estimate of the total population of magpie geese, with these results guiding the annual bag limit and season length. The statement goes on to say, we will continue to work closely with recreational hunters, residents and tourism operators to ensure the ongoing conservation and sustainability of the Territory's waterfowl population. That is a statement from the NT's Environment Minister, Eva Lawler.
G'day, Sam Nowen from the Darwin Aquaculture Centre. I've been managing the trials for oyster production on Goulburn and Tiwi Islands. Gotta love a Territory oyster, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
18 minutes past one here on the Country Hour with me, Dan Fitzgerald. How about this? France's champagne industry is up in arms after Russia enacted a new law forcing producers from the Champagne region to label their bubbly sparkling wine. So under this new law, signed by Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday, all foreign fizzy wine will have to be labelled sparkling wine on the back of the bottle. Charles Golmer is he's on France's Champagne Wine Professionals Committee. He says this change undermines two decades of talks with the EU, with Russia, about reserving the marketing term champagne for wine from that French region of the name.
It's tragic for the producers who are losing the legitimate right to use this name. It's worrying for the Russian consumers who, by looking at tags saying sparkling wine, will no longer be able to appreciate the quality and the origin of the wines they buy.
The BBC's Hugh Schofield has more on the outrage from Paris.
The French spend a lot of diplomatic energy defending their food and wine trademarks, their appellation, and with good reason. There's a lot of money at stake, and if any old producer of fizzy wine can call their product champagne, then where would that leave the thousands of vineyards that produce champagne in Champagne? And yet now, here are the Russians who, with a gall to offend all Gauls, do not just claim the word champanskoye as an exclusive Russian preserve, implying, in other words, that they're the makers of real champagne, but what's even more distressing, they demand that Moët, Bollinger and Veuve Clicquot put the words sparkling wine in Cyrillic script on the bottles that they export to Russia. Whatever champagne is to the French, it is not just a sparkling wine, and for the Russians to say that it is a very deliberate snub. Russian so-called champagne, Rossiskoye Champanskoye, or even Sovietskoye Champanskoye, has been produced for decades and remains very popular for big occasions like birthdays or the New Year in Russia. Russia's wealthy have, of course, developed a taste for the real thing, which one can only assume they will continue to indulge even after this change of terminology, raising a good laugh, no doubt, as they raise their glasses to their expensively imported but authentic French fizz.
That is Hugh Schofield from the BBC talking there about Russia's decision to make wine producers from the Champagne region label their bubbly sparkling wine. The French are not happy. It is 21 minutes past one here on the Country Hour. Time now for a tune. This one is Back on Country by Troy Cassidaly. Troy Cassidaly there with Back on Country. Well, the great news out this morning is that the Catherine Show is on. It will go ahead next Friday and Saturday, all going to plan. Its future, it was a bit uncertain after both the Alice Springs and the Tennant Creek shows were called off because of you-know-what. The president of the Catherine Show Society, Kathy Hyatt, she told Adam Steer the committee was a bit worried that it wouldn't go ahead.
Oh, of course we were worried, darling. I've been worried about COVID affecting the whole township and things like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, please excuse me, I haven't got COVID. I've just got a little bit of a cough. At the same time, we never stopped preparing for the show. We always had the attitude, you know, be ready. And if the worst came to the worst, then we would do another virtual show like we did last year. But I'm pleased to say, so far, so good, touch wood, as they say, we are going to be going ahead.
Yeah, and this could be the biggest show ever with Catherine chock-a-block right now.
It could be one of the biggest, but it also could be one of the smallest because people may, you know, COVID's affected a lot of people and not just in the sense of being home in lockdown, but of course financially. So, yeah. You know, we may find that we won't have a big show because people can't afford to get there, but we're still going to put it on and hope people come to see what we've done for them. So.
What are the highlights that we need to come to the great Catherine Show, one of my favourite regional shows in Australia?
The highlight is Yeah, it is. It is one of the best shows anywhere, as far as I'm concerned. Yep. Of course, there's lots and lots of highlights. You know, we have lost a few things, unfortunately, due to the COVID restrictions. The Defence are having a massive big display, so that'll be really worth coming to have a look at. But they were also going to be bringing up the air balloon for people to be able to go up and have a go in the balloon.
Oh.
And they were also bringing up the band and the Army Defence Band. But, you know, those sort of things have been canned. But, you know, don't dwell on the negative. The positive is that we have got some great entertainment, the bubble people. For the kids, we've got things like the Big Bang Theory. So, and that's really interesting because they make science practical in front of kids sort of thing. So they can actually see the effects. And it is a really, really great little show. Of course, we're going to have all our different sections open, craft, cooking, photography. So they're going to be going ahead. And this year, for something a little different, in the craft room, we're actually in the craft pavilion area, going to be doing some craft workshops for kids, and be for 2 hours at a time from 10 to 12 on the Friday and the Saturdays.
That is Kathy Hyatt. She's the president of the Catherine Show Society. Great news there is that, all going to plan, the Catherine Show will be on next Friday and Saturday. Time now on the Country Hour to check out what's happening in the cattle markets. Let's cross to the Roma store sale, where Cheryl Savano has all the details.
Good afternoon. Numbers reduced to 3,095, down by 264 head at the Roma store sale after the recent rain event over the supply area. Cattle continued to be mostly drawn from the usual supply area, and the overall quality of the yarding was again mixed. Steers and heifers were yarded in similar numbers, with only a small number of cows present. A good buying panel was present and operating, however, one regular processor continues to remain absent. Prices improved over the steers at the time of this interim report, with restocker competition strong over the smaller yarding on quality lines. Lightweight yearling steers under 200 kilos made to an interim top of 612.2. Lightweight yearling steers under 280 kilos reached an interim top of 628.2. Medium-weight yearling steers under 330 kilos made to an interim top of 556.2, while medium-weight yearling steers under 400 kilos sold to an interim top of 538.2. Heavyweight yearling steers sold to an interim top of 506.2. This has been Cheryl Stevano for the National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thanks for that, Cheryl. That's it for the Country Hour for today. If you missed our top story, it was that the Bachelor Meatworks is back in business for 2021. It did its first kill yesterday, and it aims to be doing a lot of buffalo. We're hoping to hear from some Territory Buffalo producers later in the week. Matt Brand will be back on your radio tomorrow. Now, take it easy.